Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Thursday Talk with the Provider Partner. This is a healthcare revenue cycle podcast. My name is Tracy Olston. I'm joined with Dr. Charles Hunley and our special guest today, Saliha Javid. One of the things that we wanted to talk about with a lot of the groups that are out there is credentialing pitfalls. I know we get a lot of questions on a weekly basis on some of the issues and problems that providers are facing with their credentialing and the way that they are being paid out and reimbursed by the insurance companies. So, Saliha, do you want to just kind of introduce yourself and explain to everybody why you are a subject matter expert in credentialing and provider enrollment?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for having me, Dr. Hunley and Tracy. I'm very excited to talk about my side of the world since it's always overlooked and undermined. But I've been in the industry for over 15 years, and I've ended up having a passion for credentialing contracting only because of the dynamics of it. This department holds so much as a foundation to any business, any practice, any provider. But at the same time, it's very undereducated. Our providers don't know how much power they have over these payers, how much power they have with their contracts. And getting that knowledge over to the providers has become a passion because it feels like I'm still contributing to my immigrant mother's dream of being a physician, which I never wanted to be. Nope, no disrespect to anyone. But I feel like I'm still giving back, helping the providers and helping them get reimbursed for what they should be reimbursed for, not what everyone's getting them contracted at. So I've worked across multiple specialties, ranged in pediatrics, behavioral health, family medicine, internal medicine. And at the end of the day, I realized that our providers will sign anything just to be a network. And that is such a downfall because it shouldn't be the number of contracts for in-network, it should be what am I getting reimbursed at? And our providers tend to realize, or they forget to realize, that they can push back. You have so much leverage over these payers to push back and get what you need and what you deserve versus what they're offering. And I've definitely enjoy that pushback, and I enjoy being the bad cop for the providers, because at the end of the day, it's a win-win for both me and the providers I work with.
You know what I find really interesting is we get a lot of providers that will reach out to us and they don't even know what they're getting paid. And once they do some investigation, a lot of them are shocked to realize that they've signed agreements in the early stages that they're getting paid anywhere between 72% to 88% of Medicare. So they're not even getting paid normal Medicare rates, and they don't know that.
I agree. I totally agree with you. And the verbiage that's written in the contracts, I don't expect any physician to know what it says or how it's being offered. It's usually in very, very weird ways of writing. And that's what I've specialized over the last couple of years, reading that verbiage. What does it mean? Our providers tend to overlook like how much leverage they have over interest payments, how much leverage they have over late payments. Are you getting paid according to the schedule? And again, I don't think the contracts are valued to the point that they should be, because when we see in-network, that's it, run with it. But we tend to forget that we need to make sure that the payers are living by what you're contracted with.
Absolutely.
So the big question, I'm a physician, as you know, and the big question is full disclosure, before I started doing this, I didn't know what this meant. And How can I negotiate my contracts? And they just thought the insurance gave me a contract and I just signed it and that was it. And I know many of my friends have that same thing.
Yeah, definitely. The payers know you will never question or you will never push back. There are ways to push back on. We have geographic information we've used. We use statistics around member lives. We use even statistics around like the provider's profile. How many years have you been practicing? What is your specialty? And it ranges. And what's interesting to me is that we may think a family medicine may not hold as much as power as a specialist will. That's not true. A family medicine provider can push just just as much as a specialist could for those rates. And the payers will honor it to you. It's just having that verbiage and that leverage with the payers. I'm not saying it's a piece of cake. I'm not saying it happens overnight, but it definitely happens. And we've seen success rates for our providers. We have those peer relations. We have those contacts at the payers that we work with to ensure our providers are reimbursed. Again, it's not an easy game, but again, it's very manageable.
So, well, and I think a lot of providers think that this is a quick process, and there's a lot of negotiation that goes back and forth to settle on good terms. It's not something that happens overnight. It can take quite a few months to settle on an exact term that both parties can agree upon, right?
Right. It definitely takes a lot of meetings, a lot of back and forth conversations. We don't meet just with one rep. We have to start with our local person, and then we work all the way up to executive leadership. Again, like, a part of the process shouldn't just stop at your rate. It should stop at what happens next. If I live by these terms, what will you offer me more? I look at it more of not a contract, but a partnership. Because if I'm bringing value to your organization, and I say me, because I represent these providers, so I take it as me. And if we're giving value to you as a payer and your member lives, then there's definitely some value you need to add back to our provider's profile. So we become that mediate negotiator and try to come to that median term where we're not overburdening the payer, but then we're not also being undervalued.
So what do you think the biggest pitfalls are for physicians?
Sure. I think it's a knowledge, just knowing what the process is, where in the process that pushback should be. The verbiage that's used in these contracts is so loud that sometimes it gets overlooked because it seems so much when you read it from a legal aspect. But once you do this day to day, you kind of know what block points to go to, you know what point to push back on, which makes it easier. Again, like, I wouldn't expect Dr. Hunley to know what a contract will entitle, because that's not his specialty. We would, because we do this day to day. So we would know where that pushback would be on. I need to stress this, and I don't think every provider understands this, but a front desk manager, and no disrespect to any team members, but a front desk member or anyone that's just a medical assistant on the team may not have that knowledge. So sometimes when we have our office personnel complete these contracts, they do what they seem is right in their aspect, but that's not right, because they probably would bind you in a contract for 2 years or 3 years, and you can't do anything about it. So we need to make sure we have specialists looking at your contracts before you bind yourself into one.
So, question here. Okay, I do a lot of inpatient. So who typically does the contracts? I mean, I know physicians don't, because if you ask my friends, we're like, hey, you know, our office does our insurance, you know, acquisitions. Who typically does it?
That's a very broad question, because it ranges. If I go back 15 years back into my work history, I was a front desk for a multi-specialty practice, and I did their contracts. And at that time, I didn't know what I was doing. So I know it happens in the industry where front desk team members or anyone that's working in the office will take that initiative. Or I've seen RCM companies, and not every RCM company is specialized in this aspect. Again, it is a department that has to get built on over the years. So I've seen anyone and everyone do quantity over quality. It's the number of contracts versus nothing. Mm-hmm. Looks at the quality of it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm sorry, Tracy, that actually, I mean, we talk as a physician, we actually talk, you know, we have this many panels or we have this many insurance providers, because our concept is the more insurance panels you have, the more people that come in the door for you. And so you're trying to tell me that sometimes working smarter, better contracts is better than me just working harder.
100%. 100%. I mean, these payers need you in their network just as much as you need their contracts to be a network provider. They have member lives they need covered. They have members that may have a preference to see you over another specialist or another provider. They need to cater to their members. And in order to cater to their members, they need a great provider panel. And if you remain out of network and they get three referrals from a member, they will go to your terms. They would like to speak to you. They will like you on their panel. So I guess we need to understand, or our providers need to understand, that they have more leverage in this phase than the payer does. And again, that gets overlooked because sometimes you don't have the right contact. Sometimes the person working your contract doesn't have that knowledge. So knowing or having all of that, all of your ducks in a row, definitely helps that process.
Yeah, no, that sounds rational.
I think it's really interesting because you mentioned years ago when I started in this business, I was actually working as a nurse and I was filling out credentialing applications and had no idea what I was doing. I was just doing it because I was asked to. And for me and probably many people that have been where you were, Celia, or I was, just getting approval from an insurance company was a huge win for us. We were just like, great, we got a credential with Blue Cross Blue Shield. We can start seeing all of these Blue Cross Blue Shield patients. But when you look at the bigger picture and you like see through the trees, per se, you start to realize, hey, I have a huge panel of patients, but I'm only getting paid 72% of Medicare. So yeah. I'm actually losing money on all of these patients that I am actively seeing because we're all so excited to get that contract. We're not looking at the fine print, or we don't have the knowledge of what exactly we should be looking at.
Yeah, and that's a great point, Tracy. Everything post-COVID has changed. When COVID came on, healthcare took a big change, and our providers don't realize that post all of that, have you revisited your contracts? Have you insured all of those attestations or those addendums are there for you to continue to provide that care and then get reimbursed? So again, back to your point, like not everyone will know or have that knowledge, which is okay because not everyone is trained. And honestly, you learn this over the years from your mistakes, from your wins, from your loses, that all of this has to be put in a checklist. And it just doesn't stop at getting that approval letter. What happens next? If I ask a provider, what happens after you get your approval letter? I don't know. I don't know. We start billing. But we need to take it to the next level. Are you loaded correctly? Is your specialty reflective? Are your claims getting paid? So there's so many dynamics in this whole credentialing and contracting process, which I feel like as soon as, to Tracy's point, we get that approval letter, it's a win and everyone runs with it. The process doesn't start and stop there, and not everyone knows that.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting is, you know, we get people that come to us for help on a regular basis and they say, but we're credentialed with Blue Cross Blue Shield, or we're credentialed with Aetna, but all of my providers are not necessarily participating, even though we have a contract. And I don't think people realize just because you have that contract, all of these different departments are so siloed at these payers that they're not talking to each other. And if you don't have the right team members in place to help you connect those dots and connect those pieces, you could have providers that are missing opportunities to see patients. You could have instances where you're not being paid like you should be. You could have instances where you're not able to push referrals through because all of those dots are not connected, because we were just so excited on the front end to get that approval, we didn't follow through with all the other steps that you have to make sure that you are fully credentialed appropriately with the payers.
And honestly, I will tell you, being a physician, if I asked myself until I went through this process, I was like, okay, I got my contract. I should be getting money in any moment. You know, if you ask me my percentage, I'll honestly tell you, I'm in a large group. I asked my business partner and I asked my my practice manager, they don't even know.
And what happens a lot of times, especially with physicians that are in these hospital environments, when they decide that they want to go out on their own, they don't realize that when you are in a large hospital setting, you are probably delegated as your credentialing, which means with the delegation is we don't have to go through all of the paperwork and all the approvals that we would normally have to if you were an individual provider. And because of that, you know, they don't check all of the things that we check, like the OIG exclusion list, the NPDB, the student residency checklist. You know, there's all these things that when you're delegated, they don't check and they don't verify, which also it's good and bad, because with delegated contracts, I know you've seen it, Celia, with delegated contracts, they'll give you a certain percentage of Medicare. It's never over 100% of Medicare with delegated contracts, because they don't give you a better rate because you don't have to go through all the pain of that credentialing and that contracting piece.
Yeah. And to add to that, I've seen providers leave physician groups or hospital physician groups where they were enrolled probably as a non-billable provider for Medicare or a non-billable provider for Medicaid. Mm-hmm. And when they come to us and we start these enrollments, they're upset because their Medicare enrollment is taking long. But we tend to forget, when you're signing these, you're signing to become a non-billable provider. And every insurance, once you become that provider, has a whole new process for you.
Can you describe that for me? Because that's a new term for most physicians, a non-billable provider. Because most of us, you know, hey, we're you know, I joke around about, we're making the donuts, we're seeing the patients, we're documenting, we're sending, you know, we're billing for the patients. Define that for me.
Yeah. So I've seen large physician groups or large hospital physician groups. They have certain contracts where maybe one may not bill Medicare, or one maybe has like an agreement with CMS where they probably do some sort of payment schedule, so they don't enroll their providers, and they'll enroll them as non-billable, which means you are agreeing to not bill Medicare and not accept any Medicare payments for a specific time of period. That has to be, once you're ready to go on your own, or once you decide to join Medicare, it's not a 1-2-3 process. You do need to do an appeal to it. You do need to submit like reconsideration and wait to get approved before you could even proceed with an enrollment. So there's like an added layer of application processes there.
So, okay. And that, I'm sorry, I'm opening up a can of worms, but let's say I work for a large hospital and I'm the non-billable provider in my group. Where does those RVUs go? Where does that billing go that I'm earning?
It could vary. Perhaps they could be billing under another provider, or perhaps there could be a billing arrangement that you may not be aware of, or it's getting billed under the group. Again, I can't speak for those groups, but mm-hmm. I've seen different billing arrangements. So it could be that they don't need you billing for your specialty. Maybe they need to bill under another provider.
So then when I go to, let's say I start a private group and I'm a non-billing provider, and I decided I'm going to go with a four-doctor practice group, which is coming very popular lately, is to leave these large practices and go back into private practice. Is it harder for me to get credentials to all these, you know, Medicare insurance and Blue Cross Blue Shield? And
it's definitely, I won't say it's harder. I would say it's lengthier, because when you leave these large physician groups, it's a 90% percentage that you are delegated. And we need to understand, when you're delegated, the payers, once you venture off on your own, they won't recognize you as a credentialed provider. You may have been delegated and rostered. All the terms are different through these physician groups, but once you leave, it doesn't end there. You need to make sure you get delinked from their delegated contracts. They need to make sure they properly term you so that you can start your own contracts. I've seen providers leaving physician groups, starting their practice, and we cannot submit an enrollment because their medical staff department has not submitted a D-link. So now we're dependent on a previous employer to take that step for you so we can start the process. And we need to make sure, you know, everything has to be done in a timely manner. Our providers, they tend to not know their CAQH portals, okay, or their usernames or passwords, because I don't know, sometimes I see the wife has set it up or the husband has set it up or his staff has set it up. It is so critical that you have that information and you know where it relies or where we can use it to do all of that. So again, it's not hard, it's just lengthier.
Okay, and so, and I'm asking this as physician. So let's say I'm going this pathway. I'm gonna do two things. I have contracts, right? But I don't know. I mean, can I renegotiate if I'm getting, as you said, 70% of Medicare, which in my specialty would be, I would go, you know, bankrupt. Can I renegotiate those things?
Yes, absolutely. And every provider should. I mean, I would always voice for it. You need to. What I mean, I look at my outlook is, or my view is, what is the worst that will happen? They will come back and say a no. Okay, we'll keep it on file and we'll appeal it again, or we will try again. But not trying is not, in my eyes, is not the way it should be. We should definitely aim to renegotiate those. And then when you're renegotiating, you're not only renegotiating your percentage, you're renegotiating all of your terms. When is my next renegotiation? Or what can you add to me on my contract as a value? If I'm serving your members in a very specific setting or in a very specific area, what are you offering back to me? So it kind of becomes that negotiation that just doesn't end at that percentage.
And so if you're telling me, and no disrespect, because, you know, front desk are beyond important. If I should be having somebody who knows how to do this other than my front desk or my secretary or my assistant, because, I mean, this sets up of how much I make per patient. It sets up, and what you're saying to me, it sets up my, like, payment schedules. It sets up everything.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I myself have seen healthcare evolve over the years. And as I've been working closely in this department, I've seen everything change. It started from like a simple CAQH application and letter, which was the best way to get approved, to now where there's like online forms, there's different portals, there's processes. So some payers will want you to start with the contract, but then end in credentialing. Well, some payers will want you to start with credentialing, but then end in a contract. And you need to know those dynamics. You need to make sure all the dots get crossed. They're linked, everything gets loaded. And then a very interesting point is, it may say Aetna, but are you loaded with the 91 lines of business Aetna has? It may say United, but are you loaded with the 101 lines of business United has? So it's not just like that one pair name. There's so many other networks within that one pair. So again, I wouldn't expect someone who is taking care of your members, taking care of your day-to-day operations, to know this. And that's why someone who has that specialty can better guide you.
No, that's, honestly, that sounds, when you just said Aetna has how many different, it's like, I have Aetna, or I'm on Blue Cross Blue Shield panel. That's what, to a physician like myself, that means that, not, oh, I, there's 121 of them, or Medicare is low, you know, has different things. Just recently, in the last, you know, while, I have learned that. It's a kind of mind blowing.
Yeah,
we just take care of patients. In other words, what you're saying is you need somebody who knows what they're doing to help with the contracts.
Absolutely. There are so many other parts that are moving parts in it. Once you become, we can say maybe all the enrollments get kicked off at the same time. And now when these commercial plans are contracting you, they may not have your Medicare number. So while you may see an Aetna approval letter, that doesn't mean you can accept an Aetna senior supplemental patient because you weren't loaded for that Medicare line of business. If you're in the behavioral health industry, yes, you got a Blue Cross Blue Shield patient, but you need to be credentialed and contracted through their third party. So if you're not contracted through their third party, you technically will not get reimbursed for that patient. So every specialty has that dynamic and difference in contracting and credentialing that, again, I would say you need to definitely specialize in.
So, Celia, I know we work with a lot of providers at the Provider Partner. If there's a provider who is unsure about what they're getting reimbursed or how their contracts read, what is the best way for them to go about getting that information?
If they do it through us, we will do it through the right channels. But the best way is to definitely ask for an audit analysis from the payers. And they are entitled to provide that to you, which is a look back of 1 year. And you can see what rates you were getting paid at. I've seen a very big challenge where providers outsource to RCM companies, or they have staff that probably leaves and they don't have copies of their contracts. It is so critical to make sure you get those DocuSigns and copies of contracts. I cannot stress it enough, because these payers will absolutely drag their feet to give you another copy of, of your contract, of your signed contract. So having that in place is critical. Again, it's not that we can obtain it. We can obtain it. But again, it's a lengthier process. We have to chase it down. And I've seen payers really drag their feet out for months before they resend that copy to you.
Yeah, we've worked with enough clients to know that if you do not save your DocuSigns when you sign those original agreements, it does make things challenging when you're trying to confirm rates.
Exactly.
So one of the things that in closing of this podcast that I wanted to mention is Celia actually works with us at the provider partner, and her and her team are willing to do a free credentialing assessment for any providers that are interested in learning a couple of things about their practice, what their contracts currently read at, if you are delegated with certain insurance carriers, what your reimbursement rates are, and getting an audit profile of you for the last year with certain payers to see exactly where you are lining up. So if you're interested in working with Celia and her team, go ahead and reach out to us on www.theproviderpartner.com.
Yeah, awesome. That was actually beyond, it's always good information, but it's eye-opening and awakening how little physicians like myself understand about that side. We just take care of patients and hope that the insurance pays us. So it's actually great info.
Yep. Welcome to our world. Sounds good.
Okay. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.